Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, and Mike Costantino is sitting across from me as usual. We're talking again this morning with Lane Kinworthy. He's a professor of sociology and political science at the University of Arizona and an expert in public policy and has done a tremendous amount of research into the facts, and that's what we particularly appreciate about a lot of his work.
He considers the evidence.
Yeah, that's the title of his blog, is Consider the Evidence, which is sorely lacking in American dialogue right now. We have lots of opinions.
It's all emotion. It's all based on the fear-mongering and emotion. But happy Labor Day, gentlemen, by the way. This is Labor Day.
Yeah, we should honor everybody who of course, works and the contribution of labor to American society. We talked about jobs last week, and we talked about the decline, I guess, in the middle class jobs. The income is increasing for the upper class. When income increases for the rich, Professor, does it, what do you call it, leak down to the less privileged? Does it scatter out into the rest of the culture?
Yeah, the perception is that there is the trickle down thing. That is, as corporations and wealthy get wealthier, that we all go up a little bit. Number one, and number two, in one of your writings that we talked about, that as the general population's income stagnates or decreases, that the government steps in to help. There's also that perception. Are either of those things true?
Well, there does tend to be. First of all, thanks for having me on again. I'm happy to be here. It is true to an extent that there's trickle down, and in fact, we want there to be some trickle down. Nobody really favors, even if you're on the left side of the political spectrum, you're very unlikely to favor anything like a perfectly equal distribution of income. That would really dramatically reduce work incentives to invest and study hard and get an education and so on, if everybody was guaranteed the same amount of money regardless of what you did. So nobody really wants that.
Good.
The question then is, if you have a society like ours over the last generation, where a larger and larger share of the economic output of what we usually refer to as economic growth is going to a very, very small slice at the top, in this case we can think really about the top 1% of Americans, and even more so the top tenth of that 1%, so a very small number, have been getting a whole lot of the economic growth since the early 1970s. That's a big change from what happened before. It's pretty different from most other rich countries around the world, although there is a little bit of the same thing that's been going on in the UK and Canada, Australia, and a few other countries, not to the same extent as here. So then the question is this actually good for people in the middle class or at the bottom? Does it have no effect, or is it bad? And if it's bad, how bad? And I'm doing some work on this. Some other social scientists have been studying this, trying to draw on comparative evidence. By that I mean cross-sectional, across national data. And the best we can tell is that it's not a very healthy development. It doesn't seem to lead to much, if any, increase in the rate of economic growth. And, of course, if the rate of economic growth isn't going up and more of what growth we have is going to a small slice at the top, then that leaves less for everybody else. And we don't know how badly this has hurt the middle class. As I said last week, in our society, middle-class incomes have gone up not a whole lot in the last generation, since the mid to late 1970s. There are an awful lot of things that have contributed to that trend, but the rise of income inequality is probably one component of that.
So, taxing the rich. I mean, how can we address inequality? Is that a good idea?
Well, it's a difficult question. There are some people who favor limits on pay, for example, for CEOs. I'm actually not among them. I think that's a pretty difficult thing to do in practice. And then the question arises, well, why just CEOs? Why not top athletes or entertainers or others? And the practical aspects of implementing some kind of pay cap or pay limit, I think, make it pretty difficult. Much simpler to simply increase the taxation of those at the top by a little bit. The actual rate of taxation of those in the top 1% in the U.S. has dropped since the 1970s and also since the 1990s. We had two big rounds of tax cuts, first under Ronald Reagan in the early 1980s and then under George W. Bush in the early 2000s. And they've dropped that rate, which is in some ways a really perplexing thing to do. If these people or this group in the United States are getting a lot more money than they used to, if their earnings and incomes have gone up a whole lot, then they can afford to, if anything, pay a larger share rather than a smaller share of that money to the government to help support all the things our government does, all the public goods it provides, goods and services. So we've been moving in kind of a perverse direction. And there's no real indication that higher tax rates, again, based on our own experience, if you look over time at U.S. tax rates and economic growth, or that of other rich countries, that this would do any damage to our economy.
The people are very worried that if we tax the wealthy, they'll take away our jobs.
That's right. It's a very common concern. There's a logic to it. If you impose a higher tax rate on someone who owns a business or runs a corporation or even a star athlete, then at least in financial terms, they have some incentive to work less hard or hire fewer people or to try to expand their business. But you can think of it in the other direction, too. That is, the incentive can work the other way. If you're taking away a little bit more of their money in taxation to, again, provide public goods and services, maybe they want to work a little bit harder, expand the business even more to get the same amount of after-tax income that they had before. And the empirical evidence, that is to say, what we see when we look at how people actually behave and how the economy grows, suggests that there's really no effect of raising taxes on the rich within the bounds that we've typically had here in the United States. Now, nobody's talking about slapping a 95% tax rate on the richest. Most of the proposals on the table these days simply refer to going back to the rates that we had back in the late 1990s, which incidentally is the period of the best economic performance we've had in the last generation, or maybe slightly more than that, because, again, those at the top now have a lot more money and a lot larger share of the income of all Americans than they did back then.
You have a great body of work on equality and the four books that you've written and the books that you're working on. I'm just going to read the titles of the what at least according to one source on the internet says you're working on. Should we worry about equality? Social democratic futures and the good society. Keeping those in mind, I want to mention there's a thing going around now about comparing the national economy to someone's personal budget. One part of understanding of economic how it works, it says it's a powerful metaphor, but it doesn't work. If we ran our country as we do our personal budgets, we'd still have 17th century infrastructure. There'd be no bridges, there'd be no roads, there'd be no public buildings. There'd be so many things that we wouldn't have as a society. That's what happens when societies get together. They can do great and wonderful things and move civilization forward. So, getting back to you, what about that? What about that folksy comparison of personal budgets to how the national budget works?
Yeah, you're absolutely right that this is very meaningful or powerful to some people, this analogy. I think it gets back partly to what we talked a little bit about last week, which is that people are very frustrated with the state of the economy right now, and understandably so. And so they're looking for someone or something to blame. And in the last year, a lot of the discourse in the media and among the political elites here in the country has been about the budget deficit. And so this analogy is very compelling to a lot of people. The idea is that, look, I'm suffering and I've got to balance my budget each year, so why doesn't our federal government?
Right.
I think it's wrong on two accounts. First of all, it's actually not true that most households have to balance their budget at the end of each year. Many of us take on a lot of debt, for example, when we buy a house. So we're net debtors. We owe money every year for about 30 years until we pay off that mortgage. Also, we may borrow sometimes to get us through difficult times, unemployment, sickness, and so on. And that's a good thing that we're able to do that. The same thing holds for the federal government. It's a good thing that it's able to run a deficit in times when the economy is bad and when tax revenues are low. Tax revenues are lower than they were before the recession. That always happens when the economy turns down because it's not humming along as well. And so the tax rates haven't changed, but there's less money to tax, so the federal government's drawing in less. So it's good that it's able to simply maintain its spending and on some programs like unemployment insurance spend more than it would during good economic times. Conversely, of course, when times are good, it's a good thing for government to run a surplus, that is to spend less than it's taking in so that it balances out over the long run. The problem was we seem to have forgotten that, or at least some of our elected officials forgot that in the early and mid-2000s. We had a surplus at the end of the 1990s, but that evaporated for a variety of reasons, largely tax cuts and increased military spending, but there were other things going on within a period of 5 or 6 or 7 years. And
if you could do one thing to put the country on the right track, wave your magic wand, what would it be?
Well, I think you have to separate the short run from the long run. We're still yet to emerge from this very, very deep economic crisis, the biggest we've had since the 1930s. And so first and foremost on the minds of our policymakers has got to be right now figuring out ways to help us get back to economic growth and lower unemployment. I personally think we should be doing a lot more with respect to fiscal policy. I think the evidence is pretty compelling and the theory is pretty compelling that that's what you need to do in a situation like this when interest rates are already as low as they possibly can go. Now, in the longer run, there are different questions, and they have to do with the stagnant living standards for the middle class and the poor since the early 1970s, and that's unfortunately a much more complicated issue, I think. We need government to think about new sources of investment, guiding the private sector, not doing it all itself, of course, but guiding the private sector toward, for example, clean technology. We need to figure out ways that we might be able to boost wages and therefore household incomes in a lot of what we call low-end service jobs, which are going to be a big part of our economy for decades to come. There's no getting around that. We have a lot of people working in these types of jobs, and we need to figure out how they can make decent wages and how their household incomes, even if their wages are kind of low, can be middle class or close to it.
Thank you for very, very much for being with us. Lane Kenworthy will be at the Door Breakfast on December 15th. If you want to talk to him longer or hear him speak for an hour or so, that's a great time. They'll be open for questions. I think that's a great thing. Next week, we don't know. We haven't got next week planned.
We just might chat among ourselves here.
But we want to thank Professor Kenworthy for being with us today. We thank him for all his research. We're glad that somebody is looking at the facts out there. We're kind of tired of fact-free arguments, Mike and I.
The workers have got somebody in their corner like Lane Kenworthy, and that's nice to know.
So we'd like to thank you for being with us. You can see or hear, I guess, all our programs on our podcasts, on our website. You can write us there. You can call us. We're usually asleep, but give us a call.
You've You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.